In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, May 13th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of our program today, we'll dig into the executive order changing the way the federal government's hiring process works and talk about what it might mean for you as a hiring manager and as a member of the workforce with Bob Tobias of American University. Bob and I were talking about that subject on the show last week, and Bob followed up with me in a conversation we had this morning. We'll also play you some highlights of the event earlier in the week. Federal News Radio's Max Kakis on scene for that, and OPM Director John Barry talking about the way President Obama is changing the way people come into federal service. That's the second hour of the program today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In our first hour, another in our series of industry chatter conversations, and today pleased to welcome from Accenture, Lisa Mascolo. Thank you for coming into the studio today to be with me.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
Great to have you here. We'll start the way we always do with the thumbnail sketch of what it is that Accenture does for the federal government for people who have been living under a rock for the last number of years.
So Accenture's a global consulting technology IT services company, and the work that we do in the public sector is actually a relatively small portion of the global Accenture organization. The nice thing about that is it really enables those of us who are in the federal market to kind of bring from the broader organization the best in the commercial environment to the public sector. Mm-hmm.
That's been the source of a lot of discussion over the years, as you're well aware. What do you find are the differences in implementation specifically when you find best practices in the private sector and recommend them to the people that you work with, the customers that you work with in government?
I think one of the things that happens when you do a lot of implementations in the commercial sector is you develop methodologies and you learn to get very efficient about the implementation process, about the design process, the build, and ultimately the implementation and in some cases run.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it brings a level of efficiency to government that might not necessarily be there if the only thing you do is public sector implementations.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the conversation around applying best practices from the private sector to the government revolves around the discussion or the hypothesis government should be run like a business. And there are so many failures in the public sector, and we see them all the time, and the private sector is sometimes I think very glossily held up to be this example of everything's wonderful and why can't we just do that in government? And I imagine you could speak to the fact that either it is or is not necessarily the case.
I think it's probably a hybrid. I think there are parts of government that clearly can and should be run more businesslike, and mm-hmm. there are parts of government, without getting into the discussion about inherently governmental
sure.
at this point, there are parts of government that need to be run and be the province of government, and perhaps business-like acumen is not necessarily the first priority.
Mm-hmm.
But in the parts of government, if you look from my perspective at the back office, things like HR or finance or procurement, when you have the opportunity to build shared services, capabilities across the government that enable multiple agencies to share in a single service, you bring private sector-like efficiencies in. Those
mm-hmm.
are good things from the private sector.
I imagine, too, that the idea that everything runs smoothly and every procurement is done well in the private sector and B2B doesn't necessarily run as smoothly as people think it does, or even sometimes as smoothly as B2G does.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, we have, as a private sector concern, we have our challenges in the way in which we procure. But I do think one of the things that the private sector has learned, and we in particular have learned over the last couple of years, really is how to drive efficiency out of the back office process. Travel, for example, Accenture consultants are one of the largest consumers of travel. And
mm-hmm.
over the course of the last couple of years, we've actually reduced our travel budget by almost 25%. I'm not sure the airlines are thrilled, but it certainly makes a difference for us
yeah.
in our internal cost control.
What do you think agencies are thinking? Do you think agencies are thinking about things like that when it comes to the concept you and I talked about before we go on the air, which is doing even more with even less? Are they thinking about things like how do we cut travel costs? How do we are they looking everywhere, do you think, to trim?
I think in the agency, they are. There's terrific examples out there. I think the challenge is to broaden that and to go across the silos. That's where you'll really get the benefits. But certainly there are examples of great tools that the government has today at its disposal. I happen to think that the government doesn't always take full advantage of those tools, whether it's e-travel or the lines of business, whether it's HR or finance or whatever it is. The tools definitely exist today. And when you talk about doing even more with even less, one of the ways to do that is to take advantage of the existing tool set.
Mm-hmm. One example of that, you mentioned travel and the travel system that the Pentagon has set up. A number of people have said, why don't we all just use the same system? Why don't we all have access to it? I mean, that's the kind of thing that makes people wonder, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a challenge given 22 cabinet agencies and the way in which today the agencies procure. But if you had the opportunity to, I guess I would perhaps not go so far as to say reprogram those line items out of individual agency budgets.
Yeah.
If you had a real mandate to use a single travel system or even only two travel systems, you could gain some efficiencies.
Yeah. A lot of that, I imagine, is, although people probably wouldn't want to admit it, is just the desire to maintain fiefdoms. This is the way we've always done it. And not even necessarily it's my fiefdom. It's somebody else does that. But this is just the way we've always done it. Any thoughts about changing mindsets in addition to changing processes?
Well, if there was ever a catalyst for changing mindset, it has to be the set of conditions the government faces today.
Mm-hmm.
The budget deficit, bigger than it's ever been, is, I think it was Tom Davis, who at a conference 2 weeks ago said something like 43% of the government's operating budget is borrowed money.
Mm-hmm. He said that on the show about 3 weeks ago.
That's not a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
If ever there's been a catalyst, the time is now to figure out how we break down some of those silos. There are probably good and valid reasons in the minds of people for continuing to enhance the systems that I have in my agency or my department.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get beyond that.
Are agencies even ready to start that process, though? I mean, that's hard work, and it's not going to be fun. It's going to be miserable for a lot of agencies because it's going to mean really ripping systems out by the root and starting from scratch.
There are tools that exist to be able to do that today. And it certainly is, from my perspective, it's not so much about the technology. It's really about the change management. It's really about the people, right? We put men on the moon
mm-hmm.
50 years ago. The technology's there. The technology's not the hard part. The hard part is getting people to understand really what's in it for them, why it makes sense from an agency mission perspective, and how it's going to change their day-to-day work. I don't
mm-hmm.
think we have done, and I think that's an industry issue as well. When the industry and the government marry up, I think we need to do a better job of helping the government workers transition from what they do today to what they're going to do tomorrow and to understand why that's a good thing.
Yeah, what's industry's role in doing that, do you think?
I think industry has a big role. And I believe we have responsibility as a partner with the government to help the government understand what it's really going to take to get from point A to point B. Part of the challenge is, and you noted before, some of these big famous procurements that fail. Part of the challenge in any procurement is that it's not a simple road. And when you think about the requirements today, and you have a 3-year, for the sake of argument, implementation path,
mm-hmm.
it's a guarantee that at some point during that implementation, there's a speed bump or a roadblock or a mountain in the way. What we don't have necessarily today is the ability to figure out in place how to get over that speed bump, around that mountain, or up the mountain. I think industry has a responsibility to talk to government about simplifying methodologies and process to deal with issues in implementation.
Mm-hmm.
Today, when you do a lot of work on a cost-plus basis, I think the government spends a lot of money on cost-plus contracts. If we had a fixed set of requirements and a fixed scope, I think industry would have more responsibility to actually help the government over those speed bumps.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the government's doing with the whole requirements problem? I talk to person after person after person on both sides who are saying that's maybe the thing that really has to change the most for the agencies to start getting procurements more on track. Not that they're terribly off track now.
It is the challenge, but if the solution to that is getting really good at requirements definition and having really strong procurement officials, that's a thing that's going to take a lot of time. And I think there's low-hanging fruit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's all agree that requirements are tough. It's tough to define the requirements. what we need to do is to have a process and approach so that when we hit one of these speed bumps, it doesn't derail the whole program.
Mm-hmm. Well, there again, that's one that you're talking about, really radical transformation from where we are today. How do you even start a transformation like that? How do you get that ball rolling?
Well, I think there are good examples out there of the government being able to do, I'll call it more agile procurement, more agile implementation. There are some examples out there.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I'm not sure all of those see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that blow up are the ones that get a lot of exposure. But there are opportunities with different approaches to methodology to actually segmenting the process, understanding where we are at the end of this month, call it a sprint for a month. Where are we at the end of this month? Let's make sure we've got the government and the contractor in the room. Let's make sure we've got the dedicated top-down support from the government, the right support from the contractor in the room at the end of the phase, moving on to the next phase, understanding what the issues are, recalibrating.
We've got to take a quick break, but you said something there I want to follow up on when we come back, which is there some of the best practices don't get as much attention as they should, and they should. So let's talk about that, how we might be able to fix that problem when we come back from the break. My guest is Lisa Mascola of Accenture, and we'll continue our conversation when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
President Barack Obama said yesterday he's confident that U.S. troops can start to return home as planned from Afghanistan in July 2011. But he says there's going to be a tough fight ahead. The comments came in a joint appearance with Afghan President Hamid Karzai at the White House. It was a meeting that almost didn't happen after administration concerns about the poor governance by the Karzai administration. I'm J.J. Green.
When you're flying somewhere, you ever think about the amount of information that is needed to get you to your destination? Airink does every day. Airink enables airlines to send and receive vitally important operational information. So the next time you hear the flight crew advise that you'll be landing in 20 minutes, you're 30 miles from the airport. You'll be arriving at gate B26, and the weather is fine. Remember, this information travels to you over one of the world's largest private networks, Airink's. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Why do some big government initiatives succeed while others fail? How can we achieve better results in government? These questions and more are examined in the new book, If We Can Put a Man on the Moon, Getting Big Things Done in Government, co-authored by Deloitte's Bill Eggers. Visit Deloitte.com/US/Man on the Moon to learn more about the book that serves as a roadmap for overcoming some of our nation's biggest implementation challenges.
EADS North America, a leader in all sectors of defense and homeland security. Today, EADS North America is delivering the U.S. Army and National Guard's UH-72A Lakota light utility helicopters on schedule and on budget. Built in Mississippi, the Lakota helicopter is just one example of EADS's commitment to the U.S. economy. Contributing $11 billion to the U.S. economy each year, EADS supports 200,000 American jobs. EADS North America, answering America's call.
Tune in to Federal News Radio on Tuesday, May 18th at 10 a.m. for Microsoft's monthly show, GovCon Straight Talk. This month's topic is contract management, cash flow, and governance for success. Guests include Mac McLaughlin and Dwayne Cook from Tatum Partners and Christine Zamuda from Microsoft. Hear how companies with government contracts need to adopt real-world strategies to master contract administration and cash flow management governance. Don't miss Microsoft's GovCon Straight Talk, Tuesday, May 18th at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. Are DOD employees overpaid? And is it possible to compare DOD pay to private sector jobs? The Government Accountability Office, they've been giving it a check, and we'll get their assessment. And those hiring reforms announced by OPM this week, what do they mean if you're a federal manager? We'll talk to the Federal Managers Association. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Lisa Mascolo of Accenture, and we were talking before the break about procurement and the reforms that are necessary there and those kinds of things, and requirements in particular. Are you getting a sense, everybody on both sides of the fence, the government side and the business side, says reform is important, so on and so forth. Are you getting a sense that there really is an impetus for change the same way as there are for the hiring reforms that we're going to hear about in hour number two? A lot happening there. Are you getting a sense that people feel the urgency when it comes to procurement too?
Yes, and I think there's a conflicting set of objectives. One of the things that we've seen quite clearly this year, I think it's one of the fastest reflections of an administration change maybe ever, is in procurement reform. Mm-hmm. We've seen a huge increase in the number of IDIQs. We've seen a big reduction in the overall size of the deals. We've seen a lot more cost-plus work. I think that the past failures that have swirled around have caused people to maybe retrench a little bit in the way in which they're going to procure. They're going to procure more IDIQs. Frankly, I think there are plenty of them out there. They're chunking up the bigger deals. So it has the potential effect of delaying the time to actually getting the value to the government and to the citizens. So I think there's a conflicting set of objectives. Yes, we'd like to be more focused on even more with even less and how we get efficient. And then there's this sort of conflicting set of objectives to be safe and to have procurements that work. Mm-hmm. And that drives more cost plus, more IDIQs.
One of the elements of getting more procurements that work is doing what we talked about before, which is getting more exposure to the best practices when things work well and go smoothly and they don't always get as much attention as they should, as you said. Is there a role for companies like yours in going to agencies and saying, hey, this way worked before, and where can agencies find these and learn more about them and then wind up using them?
I think there's two ways to do that. Certainly we do that through the proposal itself, right? That's one of the ways we all in this industry hope to differentiate ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the approach that's really going to work.
Yeah.
I think the preferred is to be able to have the conversations in advance of the RFP being on paper, in advance of the RFP being on paper, having the conversation, even in an open forum with the government about an approach to requirements definition or an approach to implementation, being able to have those conversations and influence the government's thinking, the procurement officials' thinking is the way I look at it as the second prong. Yeah, you do it in the proposal. Let's do it before the RFP's written.
Mm-hmm. We only have about a minute left in this segment before we go to CNBC, but the administration has done a lot for when it comes to open chats and taking questions. Is there a room, do you think, in procurement for a forum like that where somebody from an agency or somebody from GSA gets maybe through technology with a group of people like yourself and just kind of has an open forum about how things can change?
Sure, we'd be pleased to do that, and I know others in the industry would as well. We love to provide ideas that make the procurements better.
All right. Lisa Mascolo of Accenture, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I mentioned changes in the hiring process by executive order of President Obama. The announcement made earlier this week. Federal News Radio's Max Kakis on hand, and you'll hear about them in hour number two of our program today. It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Tanya Hansen, CNBC Radio. Stocks are lower after a jobs report. Right now, the Dow is actually up, just went up 2 points. The NASDAQ is still down 6. New data shows the labor market continues to face challenges. The Labor Department says claims for jobless benefits fell slightly to 444,000 last week. Jobless rate is currently at 9.9%. Wall Street is coming under fire from New York's Attorney General. Sources say Andrew Cuomo has launched an investigation into 8 banks to determine whether they misled ratings agencies about mortgage securities. The owner of that sunken oil rig in the Gulf is seeking to limit its liability for the accident to about $27 million. According to a complaint filed in Houston federal court today, the rig exploded and sank, killing 11 people last month. Crude is still gushing from that well. Right now, the Dow Jones is up 1 point. The NASDAQ is down about 6. Tanya Hansen, CNBC Radio.
With most CDs, it's hard to know when to lock in your rate. But there's no need to worry with the 2-year Raise Your Rate CD from Ally Bank. If rates go up, you have the opportunity of a one-time rate increase. And with an interest rate that's among the most competitive in the country, there's never been a better time to give us a try. Open an account today. Call us at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, Phil. I need a new putter.
Well, sure. They're on sale.
Yeah, I know. I read your email newsletter.
So how you hitting them?
Shot a 79 yesterday.
Oh, fabulous. You must be reading my newsletter tips.
79 over par.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you want to look at some drivers, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Email marketing from Constant Contact helps you create professional newsletters that really drive business. It's easy, and plans are as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial. ConstantContact.com.
Four workers on the team.
It was such a surreal experience to be getting ready for class and then a few hours later being diagnosed with cancer. It's just unbelievable. I was told I had 2.5 years to live.
When John Ivey was diagnosed with cancer, he couldn't afford the medicine he needed.
When it came down to money, it's very devastating. And here's a new drug that's potentially life-saving. And then all of a sudden to be told you can't afford it, you can't have it. I was dying, and I wanted to live.
John contacted Novartis about the medicine he needed.
They told us to just forget about the money portion of it. They basically eliminated that part of the equation and said, let's just get you well. If it wasn't for people like that, people like me wouldn't be here.
Developing new medicines, getting them to the patients who need them. Novartis. Think what's possible.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
This week on Agency of the Month, brought to you by ITT Defense.
The FAA runs an Office of Civil Rights. Now, part of the mission is to protect workers on the payroll, but they also look out for travelers. Fanny Rivera leads the Office of Civil Rights.
We are doing disability compliance reviews. When you go into the airport, the Office of Civil Rights will be looking and reviewing what are some of the issues with disabilities at the airport.
I'm Ruben Gomez.
Who did the FAA select to develop its next-generation air traffic management system to manage 87,000 flights every day? ITT. ITT Defense has a single focus, deliver innovative technology solutions to governments worldwide. From next-generation imaging that integrates space, airborne, ground, and soldier sensors to energy systems that disrupt the enemy, ITT has the technology and experience to address the most pressing mission challenges. ITT Defense, doing essential things in extraordinary ways. Visit them at defense.itt.com.
The last year has brought healthcare to the forefront as a national priority.
What are federal organizations doing to deliver more cost-effective, patient-centered approaches to America's healthcare system? What role can IT play in improving the quality of care while reducing the cost? Find out about government prescription for America's healthcare system at Affirm's May 27th luncheon. That's May 27th from 11:30 to 1:30 at the G.W. Marvin Center. Register today at www.affirm.org.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Lisa Mascolo from Accenture. And one area that your company is involved with that is helping agencies especially save money, which goes back to our discussion about do much more with much less, is analytics. Assume that I'm totally stupid when it comes to the concept and explain it to me from the bottom up.
Analytics, I think about very simply, is turning data into information and ultimately into knowledge that people can use to make informed decisions. That's an easy thing to say. There's a lot that underlies it. There's a lot of computing power. But it's about focusing on outcomes. It's about taking the data and transforming it. I think the intel agencies, whether they're military or civilian agencies, do a fine job of that today. Mm-hmm. And when you look at some of the problems that this government faces, I think it's Earl Devaney, who's the head of the Recovery Act,
yes,
Accountability and Transparency Board.
Mm-hmm.
I think he said something like 7% of the federal budget is lost to fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a percentage, that's not a great big number. In terms of dollars, that's a huge amount of dollars. And when you have the capability to detect those things and ultimately to prevent them, right, that's really, in my mind, that's really the goal of analytics, is to not just to detect so that then you can fix a problem, but really to prevent the problem, to prevent the fraud, the waste, and the abuse in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare is another example. Across the U.S. in the healthcare industry, $68 billion a year, 3%. Again, a small percentage, a huge number of dollars lost to fraud. When you have the ability to not just look at the data as something that drives an output, but drive the data into knowledge so that you can understand the outcomes, you've got a great opportunity to save money.
Okay, we start, though, with the data. And the first question you have to ask is, how do we know that the data that we're going to use to try to transform it into knowledge is clean? I mean, we saw what happened. You mentioned recovery. We saw what happened with recovery.gov and the data that was fed in there.
Sure.
And Maryland had 14 congressional districts. Now, we were warned about that. And I say this every time this comes up. Ed DeSev warned us that this data was going to need to be massaged, and nobody heard that part. So I think the government got hammered unnecessarily for that.
Agreed.
But if we're going to turn this data into knowledge and then into outcomes, how do we know that the data that we're using is clean to start with?
You have to make sure that the underlying systems have the safeguards in place as well, right? It's not just as easy as slapping an analytics engine on top of something. There's plenty of data out there, and part of what you need to be able to do with the data is to triangulate. And I think that's why in the intel space, they've had, despite some of the external poking that's gone on around the intel agencies, they triangulate on the data. It's not just one piece of data that drives the outcome. It's a series of data points to create the information and the knowledge that they then act on. It's not just one data point. You have to be able to triangulate, because your point is absolutely valid.
How are the agencies doing at having the data aggregated in such a way that they can use it to follow your steps, to take it to knowledge and then to outcomes?
Depends on the agency. There's a ton of data out there. There's no denying that. The cleanliness of the data is always an issue, right? And then you get to this point about triangulation. I think there are agencies beginning to look at it. So, for example, I call it green government,
mm-hmm,
right? Green government's a great place to think about the use of analytics. The government's probably the largest consumer of energy. The government probably owns or manages the most number of square feet of any entity in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can apply an analytics engine to those sorts of problems, can you reduce fuel consumption? Absolutely. Can you reduce the square footage under roof? Absolutely. Can you then reduce the payroll? I think you have a great opportunity with the data that's out there today, accepting that there are issues around it, to drive outcomes that reduce cost and increase efficiency. And, oh, by the way, drive green.
Is that only because of the sheer size of what we're talking about here? As you say, government's the largest consumer of energy, of any number of different types of energy, biggest landlord and property manager in the country and so on. Or is it just because, is this something that's possible for any organization in this day and age?
It's definitely possible for any organization. And we like to think that we eat our own dog food. We've, in Metro DC, we have something like 500,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually in the process right now of creating what we've called Workplace 2.0. How do we house the same people in differently configured space so we use less energy and so we actually need to rent less square footage?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter how small the organization is or how big it is, there's still opportunity to become more efficient. One of the things where we've actually used analytics to our own advantage is the IT enablement of our people, 180,000 people around the globe. We continue to drive down on an annual basis what it costs us to provide people with laptops and other capabilities.
Is it hard to get agencies to understand the need to invest in information knowledge like this at a time when they're trying to figure out just how the budgets are going to stretch? I mean, it seems to me that it might be difficult to get them to understand this is going to pay off for you, not tomorrow, but long-term, this is going to be an investment in what you're doing.
Right. One of the long-term fixes, if you will, that I think we need to take on in government is a business case, more of a business case-based mentality. It doesn't necessarily come naturally. It comes naturally to those of us in the private sector. We have to be able to be continually more efficient, and you have a business case, and you've got six priorities. You don't have enough money to address all six of them. You got to pick your top three, drive the savings, and then next year go after the next two or the one after that. I think helping government understand how to really create business cases that enables them to prioritize and go after the things that are going to have the biggest bang for the buck is something that we in industry have to get better at communicating to the government. I'm not a fan. I love people like low-hanging fruit as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
Low-hanging fruit doesn't have big dollars associated with it always.
Or somebody would have been doing it already.
Yeah. I think having a prioritization around the imperatives and being able to drive a business case to prove what the return is going to be and then actually sticking to that business case is a thing that government needs to do better.
And I was going to say, it seems to me the sticking to it part is maybe more challenging for the agencies because it is real easy to fall into the trap of, well, we were doing it that way and it seemed to work okay, so we'll just go back to that. That's much easier.
I agree with you. One of the challenges we see both in the private sector and in the public sector is around, take the subject of HR or even finance. When you have the opportunity to create a shared services capability, a lot of the downstream benefit is in being able to reduce headcount.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't always see people, and particularly in the government, wanting ultimately then to take advantage of it. So you spent money on the capability or the system. Now, if you're going to redeploy those people to mission facing as opposed to back office and fill vacancies in that way, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But actually being able to take advantage of the savings that are out there is part of the business case. You got to be able to stick to the business case.
How do you change minds? I mean, a lot of these issues that we've talked about all come down to the same thing, and that is what's between the ears of the people who are the decision makers.
A lot of that is the responsibility of government, and they can get that. They can get that knowledge. I love your point before about having more open dialogue and more open conversations before the RFP comes out,
mm-hmm.
before it's actually on paper, when they're committed, and then they actually have to go through with the procurement. And then there's a process. And even if halfway through they change their minds or they want a different, it's very hard to do. If we have the opportunity to talk about the top two or three priorities and how the government can think better, act differently in order to achieve, I think that's a great way to change minds.
Something that you just mentioned there, it kind of ties in with where I'd like to go when we come back from the break.
sometimes a procurement finishes and not everyone is pleased with the result and it winds up in a protest situation. A particular tanker contract comes to mind right off the top of my head. And you have some thoughts about that that I want to explore when we come back from the break. Lisa Mascolo of Accenture, my guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue in a moment.
How is the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, combating Southwest border violence and enforcing immigration laws? What is ICE doing to stop Mexican drug trafficking? And how is ICE transforming the U.S. immigration detention system? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored by Alonzo Pena, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Operations at the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
It's the only program of its kind in the world, a unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. Offered by one of the country's leading business schools, according to a ranking by U.S. News & World Report. To learn more, visit som.gmu.edu/defense or call 703-993-4457. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is June 20th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. Do it for yourself. Do it for your country.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris.
OFPP Administrator Dan Gordon.
We want everyone, both inside the government and among contractors, to know what work can be contracted out, what work has to be reserved for federal employees, and if work is contracted out, what are the government's responsibilities to be sure that we in the government maintain control of our mission and our operations?
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose is Lisa Mascolo of Accenture, and I appreciate your time to come in and do this. It's great to have you in the studio.
Thanks.
We talked about the concept of protests a little bit ago off the air and then a moment ago on the air. This is becoming, some people think, an epidemic of protesting, where it has become, some people think, a tool in the procurement process, just part of the deal instead of something that happens at the end. Talk about your view of the protest process and, first of all, whether you think it's okay. I mean, I guess it's a legitimate point of view that it's set up the way that it should be, although I doubt that's where you're coming from based on what we talked about before. But talk about your view of where we stand when it comes to protests now.
First, I do think there are way too many protests. And while there are certainly legitimate protests, and I would always defend our right or our competitors' rights to protest when they have legitimately been wronged or didn't understand because the requirements weren't clear or the evaluation wasn't appropriate. I do think there are too many protests. A protest is not a competitive weapon. All it does is delay time to value. It costs taxpayer money. It costs those who are involved in the procurement on the contractor side money. I believe there are too many frivolous protests. And I think industry, whether it's through our industry associations or as a result of individual people speaking out, I think industry has to take a collective stand about protests. I think we have to regulate ourselves. The process in government for dealing with the protests, somebody else can take that up as a cause, whether you should go first to the contracting officer or when you should involve GAO. I'm okay with the way in which the protest process gets adjudicated.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the industry side, though, we have a responsibility to not only do well for our shareholders, but to do good on behalf of our clients and their clients.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should think about how we in industry ought to police ourselves. I mean, I mentioned to you I'm not much of a football fan, but I love the red flag thing. You only get two or three, and if you abuse the privilege, they take your time out or something mm-hmm. away from you. We should figure out how to uphold the right to protest in the right situation, not use it as a competitive weapon.
But there are some, I guess, that would argue that by lodging protests, these companies are acting on behalf of their customers because they can make an argument that they really think that their deal was better for the agency or for the taxpayers.
Sure. And actually, I can think of two deals in our very recent past where actually we were the low bidder and we weren't selected. And the technology and the capability that we proposed was different than what the others proposed. Perhaps it was slightly ahead of the thinking of the procurement officials. We didn't protest. I think there are better ways to deal with those sorts of situations. When there's a legitimately bad actor in the process and the process didn't work, you should protest. But not frivolously.
Yeah, it's going to take everybody, though, to do it. And the odds of that happening, and forgive me for being cynical, but, I mean, getting every
sure.
single person, every single organization that does business with the government to get on board, and it just isn't going to happen.
I agree. It will be very hard to get everybody on board. But I think there is an opportunity through the associations and through having conversations and speaking out to get a groundswell of mentality around it that might change.
You just made a whole lot more work for Stan Soloway and Phil Bond, didn't you?
I did.
You made their lives a lot more difficult than they needed to be, probably. They're not fans of yours, I think, at this point. I'm just kidding. My guest is Lisa Mascolo of Accenture on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back to wrap up our conversation in just a moment. And in hour number two, we'll dig into hiring reforms and how they might affect your agency with Robert Tobias of American University and OPM Director John Barry.
Are you in the cloud? Whether you're managing your software on-premise, in the cloud, or a bit of both, Microsoft offers you unprecedented choice. The choice to manage the mission-critical computing resources your agency needs now with the vision, flexibility, and security features to meet many of the ever-evolving federal requirements. Cloud services from Microsoft. We're all in. Are you in?
Learn more about Microsoft's cloud services. Visit Microsoft.com/govcloud. That's Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Baseball is a game, but if you're an IT professional in the Baltimore-Washington corridor, you know what real competition is. In today's economy, you need a credential that makes a difference. The Online Masters in Information Systems from UMBC. Computing Research News nationally ranks UMBC among the top five major research universities for awarding IT degrees. Learn more about UMBC's Online Masters in Information Systems. For more information and an application, visit onlinems.umbc.edu today.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Atlantic City International Airport, located at the Federal Aviation Administration's Technical Center, has become the first in the national airspace system to deliver digital notices to airmen, or NOTAMs. NOTAMs provide computer-generated safety information to pilots and air traffic controllers about conditions at an airport, like construction and hazards. FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt calls digital information management key to meeting the air traffic system's safety and efficiency goals, as well as modernizing the national airspace system. Digital NOTAMs have safety and efficiency benefits over traditional NOTAMs, including transmitting to all air traffic management systems simultaneously, and airspace users get easier to read information. Other airports that will follow the lead of Atlantic City International include Washington Dulles, Reagan National, BWI, Richmond, and Norfolk.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Have you delayed putting together an estate plan? Your retirement savings, insurance policies, and real estate are all part of your assets. If you or your partner should ever become incapacitated, who will handle the financial or medical decisions? And how do you want those assets distributed? Hi, I'm Wayne Zell of Zell Law and host of Blueprint for Wealth Saturdays at 10 a.m. Find out how you can better secure your future this Saturday or call me at Zell Law at 571-203-9355. Or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com.
The U.S. Army is one place where PC durability is critical, and HP delivers. HP computers go the distance, from hard drive protection to rigorous testing. For durability you can trust, HP offers reliable notebooks, desktops, and workstations at special ADMC2 prices. See the full range of HP solutions now at hp.com/HP for Army. HP computers feature the reliability and intelligent performance of the all-new 2010 Intel Core processor family.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for the hour has been Lisa Mascolo of Accenture, and one of the phrases that's come up throughout the course of this hour has been low-hanging fruit, and you just referenced the fact you're not real crazy about it. But the work that you do with the government, do you see the same kinds of things that can be fixed that are the kind of low-hanging fruit on a regular basis when you go into agencies for the first time?
Sometimes you do. Not to stick too much on our favorite topic of procurement, but one of the things that I do think is low-hanging fruit is the IDIQ subject. There's plenty of them out there. Mm-hmm. We don't actually need any more, right? The government should use the tools that it has. There's plenty of IDIQs, whether they're GWECs or DWECs. Use what's out there. The proliferation of IDIQs, even over the last 14 months, I think is extreme. Mm-hmm. There's enough out there. Use the tools that are there. So that's one thing that I do think is practically no cost, low-hanging fruit.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time left, which I'm sorry about, but I want to talk just a touch on cybersecurity a little bit because it's so critical to every single agency. The agencies are getting hit and hit and hit every single day. Obviously, some agencies more than others. But I wonder if agencies are really even getting a handle on what the priorities are for protection when it comes to cybersecurity, or if we've been focused maybe for too long on the idea of we've got to protect everything and we've got to put up this firewall around our whole network and nobody can get in and nobody can get anything, or whether we are starting to see, well, we got to make sure that we've got this nailed down and then we'll worry about the other stuff later.
I do think government is beginning to segregate that, because the more you hear people talk about cloud, everybody talks about security around the cloud. I think the federal government recognizes that there are some things that require a high degree of security and there are some things that require less security. Mm-hmm. I think the thing about cybersecurity is to recognize that it's not just a bolt-on. It is a concept, it's a set of tools, whether it's hardware or software, that needs to be built into the implementation of whatever the system is, mm-hmm, to protect the data.
Yeah, the idea of having this technology woven into whatever it is that you're going to provide, I was going to use the word solution, but I wonder if that's even a good choice of words, because there have been many examples of agencies where they think they have a cybersecurity solution, and then they get a penetration 2 weeks later and are standing there going, well, what happened?
Right. It's this concept about the bolt-on. I think when you refer to it as a solution, people think that there's a thing you can go buy and attach it and it'll work. It's just not that straightforward. It is about the integration of the cybersecurity components, hardware and software, into the system or the set of systems that provides the overall business solution.
Mm-hmm. If you had a magic wand and you could change any one thing about the way, not just that your company does business with the government, but businesses in general, the whole B2G process, what would you change?
I guess I would change the upfront dialogues. I would want to do a lot more dialogue before the RFP comes out so that the government has the best thinking built into a request for a proposal. And we have the opportunity in industry to provide them with that thinking and to have an open exchange. The open exchange, I think, really makes a big difference.
All right. My list of questions is long and my amount of minutes is small. So I'm going to ask you to come back and talk to me again in a couple of months and continue this conversation. It's been great to have you in the studio.
Great. Thanks very much.